By the powers vested in me, by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Monday, Monday, Monday.
Welcome to the working week, everybody.
Hi, Matt. How are you, buddy?
I am doing good. You know, this is one of the favorite times of my day. No matter how my day is gone or how my weekend is gone, when we get this show going, I'm in a good mood.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's a nice thing to say. I feel exactly the same way because I've been married for over 30 years. So this is kind of a respite for me from what is the living hell that has become my life.
Does your wife listen?
No, obviously. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, people. I love my life. I love my wife, you know. But you know what they say, if mom ain't happy, nobody's happy. Let there be a lesson to you guys out there. If you think about getting married, think again. No, I'm kidding. That saved my life.
Way to sell it, Spike.
Yeah, man, you know, I'm just trying to save money in my blood diamond investments, you know. God, what a horrible thing to say. Hi, hope you had a great day. What a beautiful day. What an amazing, absolutely picture perfect weather Monday in September. It's late September. I can't believe how fast we ripped through this summer. We got such a late start. Now it's fall since the 22nd. Last Thursday night, I believe it turned into fall around here, and you wouldn't know it from the weather. This is the kind of stuff we were hoping we'd get when we got that really wet spring. That led to all the grass growing excessively high over in the eastern half of the state, which led to the hot summer dryout and the lightning strike thunderstorms that caused the wildfires. So while we bask in this beautiful weather, and we complain about a little bit of smoke in the air this evening around the Seattle area as the Bolt Creek fire has kind of reignited and again is a threat to that community. Let's keep in mind that a little smoke is a small price to pay for the place we live in and the folks over there in the Skycomish area off Route 2 who just got their roadway opened up and now the fire's back down. They're breathing down their throats again. Maybe looking at evacuations again. That's a terrible situation. So we hope it doesn't happen. We credit the firefighters and the natural resource folks who are doing everything they can do to keep that community safe and in their homes. And a lot of folks are already, you know, in the get ready stage of evacuation over there off of Route 2. What's it? The towns that are subject to evacuation. I know it's been covered all day on the station here today, and I apologize. We'll have it for you in a bit. I promise. I'm just kind of thinking about the trooper who was shot. Lisa brought that up in the news, and it's been on my mind most of the day, and I really am just aghast at how folks have, you know, anybody who makes it their mission to go after law enforcement and members of that community or first responders in any way, shape, or form. Firefighters, a while back this summer, I think firefighters were being targeted at various incidents and scenes, and first responders as well. You know, Trooper Dean Atkins Jr. is going to, by all accounts, survive and live a good life. You know, this is the guy that was attacked, shot repeatedly, shot in the face by an assailant who's in custody and charged with attempted murder. I mean, you heard the details on Trooper Atkinson and how he drove himself to the hospital. You know, I mean, this is a man, a National Guard member along with his dad, an admirable man who's an admirable family who's committed their life to making your lives, my life, a better place. And that's a rare breed right there. Folks who have, don't have the selfish genes that a lot of people have these days. Folks that give to their community. By the way, on mynorthwest.com, there's a story about this trooper, this brave, and all troopers. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, you know, I'm at a loss for words. Trooper Atkinson is insanely brave. But all troopers are. All members of the law enforcement community are. They take on a job that every day could be the last day on the job, could be the last day of their life, every time they leave the house, especially when people start targeting folks for the work that they do for the community. You know, if you've got grievances, pick up a protest sign, you know. But don't pick up a weapon I want to point out that there is a GoFundMe page for Trooper Dean Atkinson Jr. And the link to it is on MyNorthwest.com. There's a story on MyNorthwest.com about this trooper and his recovery.
Last check, over $40,000 raised so far.
Yeah. Their goal is, I believe, a $50,000, but let's not stop there, folks. If you have any ability whatsoever to help, this five-year veteran of the state patrol, go ahead and do that. Every little bit helps this family. Who knows what kind of expenses they're going to incur as they move forward in their life and recovery. And, you know, this gentleman is in the position he's in because of the decision he made to help this community. So if you can make a small donation, I know the family and the entire brotherhood of law enforcement, the community would appreciate it. I know I would. So, yeah, it's tough to have a really a great day in this beautiful weather and in this beautiful part of the country and hear a story like that. You know, and when folks make the decision to attack someone for their line of work, whether it's a law enforcement member or a member of a firefighting crew or whatever it might be, a social worker, you know, a elections employee.
Journalists. Happened in some foreign countries.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. You know, some foreign countries. It happens here, too. And we've become this country of divisive, argumentative rhetoric. And it's been exploited by both sides to build up their base and try to their attempt at gaining power. You know, I mean, it started as it should continue forever, that you make your case, you have your priorities and your argument, and you make your case. And if you don't win the elections, if you don't get to control the government and how we govern our future, then you come back with better ideas and make a better argument. You don't resort to a violent, a violent response to a losing effort. That's some third world stuff. That's how they do it in some countries, but not here. That's not who we are. Anybody who thinks that's the solution, you folks who are out there with your Second Amendment, overthrowing a tyrannical government arguments, you know, read a book, educate yourself. What a tyrannical government really looks like. You know what a tyrannical government looks like? It invades another country and kills innocent citizens.
Take a look at Iran if you need
some
help.
Yeah, amen. You know, the women of Iran who are standing up to an oppressive regime of, I mean, you want to talk antiquated points of view? And we, you know, and I don't mean, God, how do I frame this without talking myself off a cliff? You know, the respecting other people's beliefs is important, sure, but a regime that can't control how it acts around women. So for that, I don't want to say regime, even that culture. The culture is what I'm working for.
If you have to impose your beliefs by force, you have very little faith in the actual power of your belief system, in my opinion.
I couldn't agree more. And if you think the problem with that. Men can't control themselves around women because women are too enticing. The thought of a naked ankle sends you over the cliff and you can't control yourself. The problem isn't the ankle. You know, and maybe I am a first world snob. Maybe I'm a modern day, you know, evolutionary bigot. Maybe I am. I don't know. But the thought that, you know, we can't control ourselves around women, so we want to make sure that women, you know, take away that temptation. It's on the women to not be tempting because men can't control themselves. That just seems like the most asinine way to solve a problem that they themselves are creating. And when a woman doesn't wear her hijab correctly and is arrested by the morality police and dies in custody and an entire nation of women stand up, it's disappointing that it's just the women. And maybe I'm ignorant on that front. Maybe there are men involved in these protests as well. But it seems to me that if the morality police and this antiquated point of view that women are second-class citizens who don't have the right to independence or education or self-determination, you know, if the men in that culture feel that way too, that's – what do you compensating for? if you don't think you can be, you know, if you can't compete on even footing with the women in your culture, what kind of men are you? Are you so worried about the women in your culture getting ahead and taking your place of authority that you can't, you know, earn and deserve that place of authority through a set of accomplishments?
That's a you and problem, not a them problem.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh. That'd be like, I can't stop shooting people, so you all need to wear bulletproof vests because I can't stop shooting people. I mean, that's how asinine.
Well, that one hits a little close to home.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I hear you. I was trying to be facetious, but you're right. It's a little close to home. I mean, oh, it's infuriating that women are treated as second-class citizens. And, you know, we've got a country here full of opportunity and freedoms that we tend to take for granted from time to time. And, you know, sure, the Second Amendment is a foundational point of our lives. But it's also, by a lot of people's account, been bastardized in its interpretation and used as a kind of a cudgel to sell more weapons. You know, anybody who thinks that they're going to be able to stop a tyrannical government with the weapons they're allowed to own at home, you know, hasn't looked at the mechanization and weaponry of the modern tyrannical government. If you think you can stand up against the U.S. military with your stuff at home, you're kind of delusional. Anyway, I don't want that's way too deep, man. Let's talk about the Mariners. Now that's another depressing topic.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you really want to lift the mood here?
You know, it's funny. I was talking to the guys over at 710. You know, and I said, and it was Dave and Bob and great guys, a couple of great guys. But it's Mondays like this. Or I'm really glad I don't have a job in sports radio anymore. I did that for a while. When my life ended as a morning show guy at a rock station, because my partner retired and the company, decided that they wanted to try something new instead of what had worked for 25 years. I went over to the sports station, did that for a while, and I enjoyed it. Because I love sports. I love talking sports. But Mondays like this, I mean, thank goodness the Huskies have looked like they have, you know, made the most of a rebirth over at Montlake. But when you watch the Cougars just, you know, disintegrate in the fourth quarter against the Ducks, when you watch the Mariners blow a 9-run lead by giving up an 11-run sixth inning to Kansas City, it's not like they're playing the Braves or the Yankees or even the Astros. They're playing Kansas City, and the wheels just came off. These Mondays are just like, and then there's the Seahawks, who are everything we thought they would be, you know? They really are. And that's okay. Let's talk about that for a minute. Let's stay there because we covered the other stories. Huskies look great against Stanford. They'll take on probably the strongest test they've faced so far, which is surprising given the fact that they handle Michigan State so easily. They'll travel down to L.A. and take on the Bruins of UCLA Friday night. Friday night lights down at they play the Rose Bowl. UCLA, right? Yeah, SC plays the Coliseum, UCLA plays the Rose Bowl. But the Seahawks looked abysmal on defense. They can't stop anything outside, can't contain an outside run. Their secondary is a ghost of its former self. But we kind of knew that was coming. You know, when you let key players leave or key players decide to leave and other players retire because of injury and people, you know, you got a bunch of unproven, talented but unproven people on your defense, and you're going to give up plays. When Marcus Mariota's first eight pass, I think I read Bob Condotta's piece from the Times, his first eight completions all were for 14 yards or more, and all resulted in first downs. You make Marcus Mariota, who's kind of a journeyman guy, just glad to have a job in the NFL, when you make him look like Joe Montana, you're playing bad football. But to be fair. There's only 32 cities in America that get to do what we do, and that's have an NFL football team. And even though they looked terrible at times yesterday, it was competitive. It was entertaining. You can't win them all. And I know that's a tired-ass cliche, but we've been spoiled for a decade of quality Seahawk football, contending football. Every year the Seahawks were a contender for a championship, every year for the last decade. due in large part to Russell Wilson, but due in larger part to Pete Carroll and John Schneider and the team they built and the mentality they had over there at Lumen Field or on the shores of Lake Washington, over there at their training facility at the VMAC. They built a culture of winning. And so it's uncomfortably unfamiliar, you know, that we are a team that's not very good right now. We're going to be in the rebuilding phase for a while. Maybe not too long, I hope. Maybe you find another guy like Russell Wilson, a guy like a diamond in the rough, who is missed by most of the NFL's experts and found by our guys. We'll have to wait for that to happen. The Hawks at least solved some offensive problems yesterday. They scored some points finally. They've got some weapons. They're not far from being good, but right now they're just not very good. But that's okay. You know, we have been lucky. We've been lucky. Some cities have never got to the point where they're a contender year in, year out for a championship. You know, how'd you like to be living in Detroit? We're playing the Lions this week. How'd you like to be in Detroit where they haven't been relevant for decades? I mean, Cleveland has more first-round picks on their roster, and they still can't put it together. I mean, a lot of teams just never rise up. Jacksonville, Carolina, whatever, you know. There's teams that just have never climbed the mountain. And we have. So let's just appreciate the times we've had and the fact that even if it's not winning football right now, it's still the greatest show on earth is the NFL. The TV numbers will bear that out to be true. It is the most successful sports entertainment package ever created. And we've got one. We got a great stadium, a great fan base. They're competitive. They weren't in Santa Clara House, but they were competitive yesterday. So we can appreciate that. I know I'm trying to find a silver lining in the way how bad the Hawks looked yesterday, but I really mean it, man. Not everybody gets to root every year for the Green Bay Packers or whomever. When was the last time the Cowboys won a play? Does your grandfather tell you about how great the Cowboys were? Because that's the last time they were relevant. A lot of teams, the Redskins, or excuse me, the Commanders, those folks, you know, not in a generation have they been relevant.
The Commanders in the other Washington, in case you're making mugs.
Right, if you're looking at your mug and you're wondering, I'm still looking for one of those, by the way.
Darren Dito snagged one off eBay.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Said
he's going to bring it in one of these days.
So I want to thank a texter already. Thank you. There are men in the protests in Iran. I'm glad to hear that. I'm very glad to hear that. Yeah, because that's what the world needs, man. A sense of perspective. You know, like I said, I've been married for 32 years. Women are not second-class citizens. Certainly not in my household. I'm lucky to be amongst them. I've got a wonderful wife and two beautiful, incredibly intelligent daughters.
3-1 in your house.
They are, and they're all. I come in a distant fourth in my house, and it's deserved. I don't get up to the medal stand ever. That's okay. I'm happy to be here, just happy to be here. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. We got a lot to talk about tonight. We're glad you're with us. Again, if you want to text in to the show, 888-973-5476. We'll be right back. Drummer for you there, folks. The Magnificent Seven from the Clash of Sandinista release. Hey, in my wheelhouse. Oh, welcome back, everybody. It's a beautiful sunset tonight, but it's also like an hour shorter than it was a couple weeks ago, it seems, right? I mean, it
certainly feels that way.
I know. When we start turning toward the fall and the days get shorter up here in the Great Northwest, it's now, I read this week, the sun comes up after 7 a.m. and goes down before 7 p.m. You know, makes you really appreciate what we got up here weather-wise, culture-wise. Do you dream a lot, Matt? Do you remember your dreams? Are you a big dream guy?
I do. I'm not a person who's prone to pleasant dreams. I'm more prone to the ones that psychologically disturb me.
Really? Like,
yeah.
Do you dream about, let me ask you this, because I do it too. I have dreams that are always take me back to places in my past. I tend to have the same, not the same dream, but the same setting. You know, I'm always finding myself at one of the schools I used to attend, whether it's my high school or my elementary school. And I'm always in my dreams, and it happens too often. I'm trying to find something or get somewhere, and I'm having a hard time doing that. And I have this dream all the time. It seems like I can count on it at least once a week in some shape or form. A dream where I am back at one of my schools, and I'm trying to get somewhere or find something, and I'm not having any luck. And I've had some education in my life, some psychology classes, some sociology classes. My first attempt at higher education was chasing a degree in psychology, and did a few years of school. Wasn't really serious about it. It was my early 20s. You know, I was patterning my educational pursuits over after the movie Animal House. So I might have had a bad business plan for getting an education. It went much better when I went back to school in my later life as an adult.
When you could appreciate the value.
Yes,
of it.
And what I was spending. Yeah. So anywho, if you're like me and you have dreams that involve you being back at school, I mean, the classic is waking up and you're late for a test. Or you go and you're taking a test and nothing on the paper makes any sense. It's all written in a foreign language, or it's all, you know, something, a test you weren't prepared to take. You're going to take an English exam and it's all math problems or something, you know, some variation on that. Well, there's an article in the Atlantic magazine that assesses why we seem to go back in our life when we dream, because it's not an uncommon thing. I thought it was unique to me, but it's really not. I took a dream analogy class once during part of my psychology classes, and a lot of dream analogy is, I mean, of course, it's all interpretation, like all psychology. There are different schools, different disciplines of psychological thinking, and different explanations for why we are who we are and what mistakes in our past we're trying to make up for, that kind of thing. But I found this article to be pretty spot on, at least from a personal perspective. It seems, according to this story in the Atlantic, and I'll try to find the doctor that is quoted in this story. The doctor is Deirdre Barrett, a dream researcher at Harvard University, author of The Pandemic Dreams and The Committee of Sleep, two books on dream analysis and what your dreams mean in your life. Because if you can figure out what your dreams mean, you can use that to help solve the problems you're currently going through in your life. Common interpretation about dreams is that dreams are you trying to sort out memories and trying to solve modern problems or anxieties that you have in your waking life. When you are in your waking life and having not necessarily problems, but worries, concerns, anxieties, your brain will try to help you sort those out and solve those problems in your sleep. That's what sleep is. It's your brain taking memories and storing them away or trying to solve things that are giving you trouble during your waking life. And one of the reasons we go back to, according to this report, this report done by Deirdre Barrett in the story in the Atlantic magazine, when you go back to school in your dreams, it's because that's where you learned how to learn. That's where you learned how to problem solve. And while, you know, the education portion of all of our lives was a really brief segment of our lives, you know, if we're lucky, we went to school 12 years or less, or I mean, maybe a little more if you're really lucky and you got to pursue higher education. And I'm not knocking folks who didn't.
Sometimes you enjoy a grade so much you just have to repeat it.
Yeah, I had so much time and so much fun in the eighth grade. I repeated the eighth grade. I've never said that out loud before to an audience, but there it is. Yes, I did. Missed a lot of school that first time around. Caught it up in the second. Did great in the second time in eighth grade. Anyway, let's not dwell on that, Matt. Thanks. If you are dealing with a problem, and you learn to solve problems in the ages you were in school, when you go back to school in your dreams, it's you trying to solve a current problem. For me, what I've realized in my dream assessments and, you know, having read this article, and I'm going to look into this author and maybe pick up one of her, or both of her books, you're judged by people. Your teachers in your dreams, in school, in your memories of school. It's where you learned how to learn, and it's where you were judged. That's where you're graded. In this job of radio, you're trying to, you know, impress an audience, win over an audience, you know, or at least entertain an audience at worst, or at the bare minimum. You want people to like what you're saying and what you're sharing on the radio. You want them to enjoy being a part of what you're sharing, your show, and the fact that they will come back. So the fact that we are constantly being judged by our audience for what we do.
Oh, boy, are we.
Yeah. And that's fine. But that's why when I have all these dreams about being in school, especially of late as I got back to doing this again, which I'm very grateful for the opportunity, and I hope we do a good job and you folks like being around what we do. That's why I go back to school in my dreams.
So question, being a 30-year veteran of the radio industry, do you have radio dreams?
Very rarely. Very rarely have radio dreams. Like I said, most of my dreams are me, and the ones I remember anyway. I don't remember. They say you only remember, you dream between 3 and 7 dreams a night.
Do you have that one where, the record or whatever is running out and you can't get back into the building? That seems to be the common recurring theme among, veteran radio personalities. Something where they're locked out of the studio, something's going wrong technically. Ever have that one?
I have not. But then again, my job in radio has never been to be the guy pushing buttons.
See, now I have, and it's always been at the same station, a station I actually worked at. And every time, it's something to do with being locked out of the automation in the music system. I can't change the songs. I can't control anything. And every time, the manager of the station's a different person.
Was that a station where you were critiqued, judged?
Oh, very
that's,
much
that's
so.
Why. That's very why. That's why so. You're, according to this article in the Atlantic magazine, that's why you keep going back to that station. Because in your memory, that's where you had to impress someone. That's where you were being graded or judged.
I see.
So you have to win that approval. And if you are doing something in your current life where you're, we're going through this new system transition here at Cairo. And it's going to be eventually a much better system for you, the audience, so we can deliver the news and information you want, entertainment you want, opinions you want, around the clock. Maybe you don't find them here at 7 o'clock at night, but maybe you find them earlier in the day, and I can respect that. I don't have all the answers.
I was going to say, people want my opinion. I wasn't aware of the demand for this.
You'd be amazed. You'd be amazed. We have a very diverse audience, as you can tell by the. 4-letter words texted to us.
With a great vocabulary.
Yes, some folks really know how to spell in this
audience. I've learned words I didn't know.
Yeah, I've learned parts of my anatomy I didn't know before this audience showed up.
Impossible physical
feats. When they say love yourself, do they mean physically? Yes, in the 603.
It's Justin Bieber version.
I know I'm not a shrink. I know that. I have studied some psychology, and I attended bar for almost 14 years. And you get to learn a little bit about people from behind a bar. I learned more about people behind a bar than I did in a classroom studying textbooks or listening to lectures. Trust me on that one. I can honestly tell you that. People are basically, they want to feel safe. They want to feel self-accomplishment. I'm not a shrink, but I know a little bit about some folks. Folks want to be appreciated, respected, secure. That's the human nature. And to survive, folks want to feel like they're going to be okay. Someone's going to have their back, and they're going to be able to accomplish the things they need to accomplish. That's basic human nature. Yep.
Still wish I understood why Lena Dunham was managing a radio station in northern Minnesota.
When was that?
It was in the dream because every general manager was different. So it was like famous people that were in this small town in the middle of nowhere for no reason. Craziness.
Unbelievable. Well, I hope you guys get a good night's sleep. You can start right now.
Not while you're driving.
No,
preferably.
Not while you're driving. No.
Like my grandfather.
It's going to be fine. Folks, we're glad you're with us tonight. If you hear something you like, let us know. If you hear something you don't like, please let us know. And I see from a lot of textures you have no problem with that. We got more to do, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. got here, Matt?
This is one of the greatest power pop bands that very few people know, a band called Big Star.
I don't know if I've ever heard this song.
They are very critically acclaimed. It's like the Velvet Underground.
Gotcha.
Very few people know who they are, but all of the ones who do started bands.
Nice. I can see why. I don't know if you guys noticed this, if you watched either of the home games this weekend as far as football goes. Both the Huskies and Hawks were home this weekend with completely different results, by the way. But one commonality, a drone. It first happened over Husky Stadium Saturday night in the fourth quarter of that game, if I'm not mistaken. And play was interrupted in the UW-Stanford game for almost 10 minutes, I want to think. Yeah, more than 10 minutes, when an unauthorized drone was seen hovering over the field. And for player safety and for safety of all involved, it was, everything was stopped until the drone left the area. I mean, what else can you do? And then the thing happened again on Sunday at Lumen Field in the fourth quarter of the Hawks-Falcons game. A drone was hovering over the field in the NFL game. And there is a law that says you can't have a drone over a public sporting event for up to 1 hour before and 1 hour after any events. So I don't know whose brilliant idea it was to bring their drone out over top the field. The sideline reporter for the Seahawk game, I apologize, I forget her name, but she said that it was the same drone that was at Husky Stadium, and it was it belonged to the University of Washington, was what she speculated on the sideline of the Seahawks and Ravens game. It was Jennifer Hale, thank you, texter. Fox field reporter Jennifer Hale said during the Seahawks broadcast that the Washington Athletic Department was responsible for the drone on Saturday, which lost connection and went rogue over the field. That was not the case. Coach Kalen DeBoer of the Huskies clarified, saying that the UW had no connection whatsoever. It did not belong to the UW, the drone at Saturday's game. And I'm not sure if the drone on Sunday was the same droner. Is that a drone owner? Is that a droner? I'm not sure it was the same one or not, but there's up to there's civil penalties up to $37,377. And potential criminal prosecution for violating a public event's anti-drone policies. It was just weird that it happened once, and it was insanely weird that it happened twice. So you got to wonder if there's some kind of connection. I'm sure they'll find out what it was and who did it and why. And I'm sure, at least I hope, I can't imagine it'd be that hard to find out. And luckily the drones just went away, because what do? Shoot it down? I mean, it could hover over there and stay there and end the game.
Well, until the battery ran out.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I don't know a lot about drones, obviously.
I mean, they can't stay up forever.
One texter says, incorrectly, that the drone accomplished what the Seahawks defense couldn't. It stopped the Falcon offense for almost 8 minutes. That's true. And the real shame this weekend was that drone didn't stop play over in Pullman during the late fourth quarter when the Cougs were just cooging it against the Oregon Ducks. Yeah, that's all we'll talk about there. Sorry, Duck fans. Sorry, Cougar fans. I know it was a rough weekend. It's Cowrie Nights with Spike O'Neill, Matt Butler. We'll be right back. Hang in there.